you don't have to be nice. You can be kind to someone. You can share with them and like empathize with them, but that doesn't mean you have to be nice to them. Those are two completely different things. And for me, I guess writing that was just permission to myself that I don't have to make other people feel comfortable with this book. I don't have to make people feel comfortable with who I am. I don't have to make people feel comfortable or shrink myself for existing.
What's good? I'm Nikisha Elise Williams, and this is Black and Published, bringing you the journeys of writers, poets, playwrights, and storytellers of all kinds. Today's guest is C.M. Lockhart, author of the Afrofuturism fantasy novel, We Are the Origin. A self-proclaimed writer since the second grade, C.M. said that when she discovered classic novels like The Bluest Eye and Their Eyes Were Watching God, she knew she wanted to write similar stories about the lives and loves of Black girls.
I wanted to put it in a genre that I resonated with and I enjoyed, because I'm like, two things can be true at one time. This can be very Black and it can be very fantastical at the same time.
Despite always wanting to write, CM admits that her journey was not without detours. She opens up about how she returned to writing at the lowest point in her life. Plus, how writing in the fantasy genre allows her to stretch her imagination. And her own personal questions of faith that helped her create the gods and goddess who rule the world she created in the book. That and more is next when Black and Published continues. Let's jump right in. When did you know that you were a writer?
Cool. I knew I was a writer around the second grade. We had a free write in our class. It was the first time that a teacher was ever just like, you know what, just sit at your desk and write whatever comes to your mind. There's no prompt, nothing. And I came up with this story, and it's like a retelling of like the monkeys jumping on the bed. And I was so proud of it. I like, during my free time at recess, I made a little cover for it, stapled it together, took it home, showed it to my mom. I was like, look. And that was kind of like the moment I was like, ooh, this was fun. I want to do this again. And then it kind of hit me again when I was around 13, 14. And I started writing on like Wattpad when it was still very, very, very new. And I was like, yes, this is it. This is what I want to do. Took some detours along the way, but you know, we got back to the goal, to the purpose eventually.
Okay. Were you always interested in fantasy and science fiction and that type of stuff?
Absolutely. I have always had a love for like magic. Even when I was a kid, you know, watching Dragon Tales and, you know, the Magic Tree House, reading that as a kid, to bigger fantasy as I got older. Like, I love the idea of there being completely different worlds with like dragons and magic and gods and all these myths and lore, and just the idea of people acting and being different than like the confines that we have of the real world. That just has always intrigued me.
Okay. So that was the first part of my question. So now I want to get to the detours. How did this love for writing and wanting to write carry you throughout your life as you took detours intentionally, I'm assuming?
So yes, the detours were definitely intentional. Being a Black girl growing up in the early 2000s and the internet is still very new, content creation isn't really a job yet. And my parents were just like, you need to support yourself because you can't live with us forever. So just taking those practical detours, like going to college and getting a degree in something that I absolutely do not do. And that I can say now that I didn't ever want to do it really, but like convincing myself at the time that this is what I want to do. I can make money off of this. I can have a living.
What is your degree in?
Speech language pathology and audiology. So speech therapy, basically. That's what most people know it as.
I got it. I was just curious. I'm like, you didn't want to do it. But so I just thought it was going to be like economics or something crazy. I don't know.
Oh, no. I remember very vividly. I told my mom, I was like, hey, I want to be a writer. Like, I want to go to school for writing. And she was like, no. But what about speech? You can help people learn how to talk. It's kind of the same thing. And I was like, okay.
It's
so
not.
That's kind of where that came from. But to answer your original question of how has it kind of guided me, for me, it's always been like a reprieve. Like, this is where I get to stretch my imagination and where I get to write these characters who don't have the same limitations on them that I have to live with. Characters who can have the autonomy to make these decisions for their own life and have the power to do so. And if they don't, they can still, you know, do what they can, like this ability to quote unquote fight the system. And even as I took, you know, detours and I became a teacher, you know, I still loved reading books because I taught middle school and then elementary school. And so just helping my students find books where it's just like, yeah, these books are great. Like, you still have an imagination. It's not just, you know, we have to read the boring stuff. Like, we can read fun stuff too.
And saying that you can read fun stuff as well, did you like not gravitate at all towards the literary canon, the traditional classical canon, or, you know, the Black canon?
I definitely gravitated towards it in high school because it was the first time that I went to a predominantly Black school and I had Black teachers. And I was one of those kids where, you know, our teachers were like, oh, you have the assigned reading. You need to read it before you come to school. Everybody else was like, no. And I was like, yes. Okay. Give me the books. I did all of the assigned reading before class started. And I loved it. I loved A Raisin in the Sun. I loved The Other Westmore. I loved The Bluest Eye. And I absolutely ate up Their Eyes Were Watching God. I still love Their Eyes Were Watching God. And it was just like my first introduction to these authors, where it's just like everything up before that, I was basically told that there are no books with people who look like me written by people who look like me. So high school was very eye-opening. I'm not going to say that I absolutely stan the classics. I am not a classical person. Like I said, I gravitate towards fantasy. I'm not going to pretend to be someone different, but my mom had The Color Purple. And when I was old enough to watch the movie, she was like, yeah, it's a book. And I was like, really? And she's like, yeah, it's upstairs. And so she went and got it for me. So I read The Color Purple after I watched the movie. And I was just like, wow, this is incredible. And I had kind of the same type of experience with Their Eyes Were Watching God. And I remember this moment when I was like 15, right? Very still freshly new into like reading the classics in high school. My mom took me to a Borders. And so she found me just sitting at the bottom of an aisle and I was like reading this book and I was like, Ma, this is amazing. It's like got these Black women in it and they're going through their life and it's so great. Did you know about this? Oh, tell me why I had picked up Waiting to Exhale by Terry.
I know. I was like, it's got these Black women. I was like, she got Waiting to Exhale in her hands.
And I was just so amazed. And my mom was like, you're kidding me, right? And I was like, no, this is great. And she's like, yeah, I know. I have like 4 books by her at the house. I don't have that one, but yeah. And she's like, it's a movie and everything. I was like, what? Really? And I just, when I tell you I ate that book up and when I moved out, I took it with me. I was like, no, this is mine.
That is hilarious. So I was the bookish kid, but my mother told me I could read anything on her shelves except Terry McMillan and Jackie Collins. So I didn't get to Terry until I was out of college, out of undergrad. But what I want to ask is that in delving into, you know, these Black literary classics first, but still having a love of fantasy, what did those writers teach you about what you could do when you get to magic and dragons and high fantasy and creating gods and realms and all of these things?
For me, it was more so just the validation, just seeing this experience written down in a way that was appreciated. I was just like, I want this, but I want this in the genre that I like to read. Like, this is great. This is magnificent. This is wonderful. This is validating for me because this is an experience that I know other women have. And knowing that, seeing that, I wanted to take that and I wanted to put it in a genre that I resonated with and I enjoyed, because I'm like, two things can be true at one time. This can be very Black and it can be very fantastical at the same time.
So with that said, when did you start deciding that since you did not see what you wanted to read, like Toni Morrison always said, you decided that you were going to write it? When was that point in your life?
9th grade in Miss Guine's class. I had AP English with her And around the same time that I found those online forums, like I told you about, and I was reading all these stories by like other people who were posting their work. And I was just like, where are the Black people? Where are the people of color? Where are any, literally anyone besides white characters? And like, no shade or anything. It was just like, I just want to know, like, where is my representation? Right. And so I was just like, bump it. I'm gonna just do it. And then being in these communities where it's just like, every time you get on there, it's like, do you want to like upload a story? Do you want to write a story here? And then finally just being like, yeah, yeah, I do actually. Let's see what this is about. And it was just, I don't know, it was fun. It was really fun. And that kind of opened the door to all the possibilities, you know?
Okay. So that was like ninth grade. So then when did you start the journey for We Are the Origin?
The true journey for it started, I guess, 2016, I want to say, like January 2016. I was freshly married, had just dropped out of grad school, had moved across the country against my parents' wishes. I was not really talking to my family, and I was in an unfamiliar state with no car, no money, and no job, no like purpose at all. I was literally at the lowest point. And I was just like, you know what? I want to write because this has always brought me joy. So like, let's bring some sunshine into this very dark year. And I was like, I want to write about this Black girl who is, she's just strong and she's not out here trying to people please. She's just wanting to live her life with this man that she loves, who ultimately became, those characters became Brandy and Jack. And that went through a lot of iterations. I say this to anyone who I ever get to talk to about my book, like there are so many versions of We Are the Origin that will stay locked on my computer. But I would get like 40,000 words, 60,000 words into the story. And then I would just be like, this isn't what I want. And then I would scrap it. And finally, after some more detours and practicing my writing skill and getting it to where I want it to be, finally in 2020, the end of it, November, actually, in NaNoWriMo, I was just like, I'm dropping everything. I'm going to write this book the way that I want to. And it came out, it came out the way that I want it to. And I'm really grateful for that journey because I don't know if you've ever heard the quote, but it's just like, you know, sometimes your writing is like a musician whose ear is true, but your fingers can't play the notes. Writing is the same way. Like I knew the story that I wanted to write, but I did not have the skill to write it the way that I wanted to in 2016. And I kind of had to go through everything that I went through in order to be able to write the story that I actually wanted to write. And I'm really proud of this book. I have no regrets about anything that I have put into this book. And I'm excited about book two.
I don't know if you saw my mouth drop when you say you would get drafts 40, 60,000 words and then just scrap them. I think that just made me like have a slight heart attack. I'm not okay. but I understand the need. I don't like when I don't get to use all of my words, even when I'm cutting my own. It just really makes my heart hurt.
It was a process.
I know it's a necessary process, but it still hurts so much. But I want to ask, because you talked about getting the skill to write the story that you wanted to write. Like you knew what you wanted to write, but it wasn't coming out the way you wanted to. What did you do to gain that skill? Because you talked about dropping out of grad school, but you didn't go back for an MFA or anything like that. So how did you gain your skill?
I thought about going back to get an MFA, but something that I know about me, very honestly, I don't like school. I have been on both sides of it. I have been a student and I have been a teacher. I don't like it. So I was just like, I'm not going to go back for an MFA. I know that's a thing, but no. But as far as like growing my skill, a lot of it was just practice, like writing. And then, like I said, getting to 40,000 words, 60,000 words, and just being like, I don't like this. And I think that was really hard for me as a writer because it's just like, obviously you put a lot of time and effort and work and energy into it. But then for me, I was just like, if I'm not entertained by my own writing, then I'm not going to put it out. If I don't want to read it again from the beginning, or if I'm like, I want to skip this, you know, 20,000 words to get to like over here, then this first 20,000 words is not worth what I think it is just because I put time into it, you know? And that's why I was able to get to a point where it's just like, this story isn't going where I wanted it to go. The story isn't doing what I want it to do. The story is not entertaining me. Therefore, it has to go. I just need to just go back to the beginning, go back to the drawing board and figure out where I went wrong. So a lot of it was just practice, but then also a lot of it is just dissecting stories in general. What did this author do that made me want to turn the page? What did this story do that kept me entertained? Why am I still thinking about this one book 3 months after I've read it? And I still keep coming back to it. What element does it have that I can try to replicate? Because I'm like, if you can take a skill, you can replicate that in your own way. And so like for me, I watched a lot of movies, read a lot of books, reread a lot of books. And I was just like, okay, this made me feel something. Why? But sitting with it and thinking about it is what kind of led me to improve my writing, because then I would write characters like Brandy. And I'm just kind of like, okay, but what's going to be the thing about her that I like about her? And the thing that I like about Brandy is that she's not nice. Like, she goes through things, but at the end of the day, she is who she is. And her personality doesn't change because of the things that she goes through.
So you began in November 2020 with NaNoWriMo and did a draft that you liked.
Yes.
Of We Are the Origin. From that point, what has your publishing journey been like?
So my publishing journey has been extremely fun. I am indie published and I put my book out myself, and I created Written in Melanin Publishing for that. Written in Melanin started in 2019, before all of this, when I quit teaching. And I was just like, that was my moment where I was like, it's do or die. This is plan A. There is no plan B. And I was like, I want to put out books, fantasy books specifically by Black authors, to help fill this void that I always felt as a child. Like, there's no reason why in this big old year of 2020, that we don't have more books with Black girls as the lead who are loved by the people around them, you know? So that's where that came from. And so I wrote We Are the Origin November 2021, not 2020. Because it came out this year, 2022. So point of that, all that to say that publishing, once I wrote it, I was just like, I had like maybe a solid hour where I was like, yeah, I'm going to shop this around. And then my husband was like, no, you're not. Absolutely not. So how do I say this nicely? I don't know. I'm going to say what it is. Traditional publishing is not where I want to be, because I know the kind of story that I want. I know the kind of story that I wrote. And what I have seen, when you have Black girls on the cover, they're usually the only one in the story. And if they're not, then they are usually a very different version of what we generally accept Black girls to be. And they have to be a certain version of themselves in order to be pushed in traditional publishing. And at the time when I was considering shopping my book around, I had not seen a Black girl who did not have a white love interest in traditional publishing. And I was like, my character, she's Black. She is not friendly. She is not nice. She is very standoffish with people who do not know her. I was like, she's high key violent because she's an assassin.
I was like, she's a murderer.
Yeah. And traditional publishing is just very white. There's no other way around it. And my book is very Black, and I wasn't going to change it for anyone. And there, how to put it? It's my book, and I wanted it the way that I wanted it. And I was not going to get an agent or an editor who's going to be like, okay, but what if? No. It is written the way that I want it to be written. And not to say that I'm above like changing things, because I did have an editor, but it's an editor that I picked who I wanted to make sure that he understood what this book was and what I was trying to allow it to be. And I didn't want to soften it, change it, because I had heard horror stories from other authors, specifically traditionally published ones, who had to change major aspects of their story to the point where they were no longer proud of the books that they put out. And I was just like, I don't want that for myself. And if I have the skill, if I wrote the book and I can pay someone to edit it and I can pay someone to come up with this dope cover, and I'm going to have to promote it myself anyway, because traditional publishing doesn't really give budgets like that to Black authors. And I'm not going to get a big enough advance to like buy a house like some people do. And I'm going to have to also give up creative freedom over it. I don't see what the appeal is. And I'm like, if I have the skills, going back to what I said at the beginning, do it yourself, you know? And I'm really glad that I did, because like I said, this book is what I wanted it to be. And I feel like I'm helping to create a space within indie publishing for, you know, longer form fantasy, where it's just like, I'm really proud of the fact of the company that my book tends to keep on social media. And it is in conversations with these traditionally published fantasy books that people love. But it's just also like, my book is indie. Like, there's more options out here than just, I don't want to say signing away your creative freedom, but like signing away your creative freedom in the hopes that it will reach the target audience that it's looking for, because my book has still reached this target audience and I get to keep all the coins from it. So like, it's a win-win.
So with that said, do you have your book with you so that we can do this reading?
Yes, I do.
Black and Published family, it's time for the reading. We Are the Origin is an Afrofuturism fantasy novel that follows Brandy, a hired assassin for the Queendom, which worships the goddess Freya and her four lovers, who are also gods. However, when Freya demands that Brandy protect instead of destroy, she is sent on a quest to connect with those gifted of the gods in a race against time. Here's CM.
And just so you know, I did practice. I was reading along with my audiobook narrator just for this moment, so hopefully it pays off. She'd never met a god before, but there was no question that she was in the presence of one now. "Your mother is bold to speak against me when my beloved rests in her home," he said. "And in my own domain, no less." He shook his head, his hair falling over his shoulder and casting a shadow over the left side of his face. "You children of Roth," he said, his lips curling in disgust, "have too much pride." Sarah wanted to puke from the sheer amount of fear coursing through her at his words. There was so much loathing in them. He spoke in a language she had never heard, but even so, she understood him. It sent her young mind spinning, and she wanted nothing more than to cry and run to her father, or wake up to find this was all nothing more than a terrible nightmare. But when he reached one pale, elegant finger out to lift her chin, she knew he was real. Her body was numb, and in the face of absolute fear, there was nothing she could do. "I came here to punish your mother as she requested," he said with an air of disinterest, using his finger under Sarah's chin to turn her head to the left and then to the right. "But you," he hummed, "I find you to be intriguing." He smiled, a warm thing that chased every chill from Sarah's body as she looked on him. "What is your name, child?" With a pulse in her throat that jolted her forward, her voice returned just long enough for her to utter her name. "Sarah." "Sarah," he repeated, making her name sound like a melody as the stars shimmied and danced above him. "Your hair is the color of Roth's treasured sun, but your eyes," he leaned closer to her, shifting slightly so that the light fell onto her flushed cheeks, "your eyes carry the moon." He chuckled, and Sarah shivered as the sound danced over her skin and played on her spine. It was both painful and delightful, terrifying and addicting. She didn't know whether to scream or laugh, but as quickly as the sensation came, it melted away. A memory, just seconds later, she couldn't be sure was real. Her legs began to ache as she kneeled on the hard floor and he studied her. He watched her as if he were watching a movie of her life, and she didn't dare move from under his gaze as the grin on his face grew wider. "I do believe I've taken a liking to you, Sarah," he said, a gentleness in his voice that felt comforting, like he'd taken the black velvet between the stars and wrapped every word inside them. "So this is what I shall do," he said, removing his hand from her chin. "I shall overlook your mother's transgression." He paused and looked at her. "Do you know what that word means?" Sarah shook her head and he adjusted his wording. "I will forgive your mother this once. So you'll do me a favor in return for not taking her with me, won't you?" Sarah nodded, stricken by how little the god cared about taking her mother's life. It seemed as trivial to him as brushing his hair away from his face. "Good girl," he whispered. "There is something I need you to do. But first," he gestured to himself, "do you know who I am?" Sarah nodded again, and he shook his head. "Speak my name, child." "Asari," she whispered, "god of the moon." "And do you know whom I love more than anyone?" "Freya," Sarah answered, "goddess of life and judger of souls." "Very good, Sarah," Asari praised. "Right now, my beloved is incarnated in the little girl next door to you, the one with the beautiful green eyes." Sarah felt an envy like nothing she'd ever felt before overtake her at the god calling the other girl beautiful. She'd never felt insecure. didn't know the feeling just yet. But in that moment, she wished Asari had carried the same kind of wistfulness in his voice when he said her eyes carried the moon. But she pushed the feeling aside. As he said, the gods loved Freya more than anyone else. It didn't seem to matter what form she was in. "I will give you power," he promised. "Power to heal anyone you wish. I shall teach you the words," he smiled. "Then you need only call on me, and I shall aid you. In exchange," he continued, "when Roth raises his son, you must heal my beloved. Do you understand?" Sarah nodded, and he beamed, almost blinding her with the brightness of his joy. Without warning, he leaned forward and placed a gentle kiss on top of her head. She melted into his soft touch before her body convulsed, and what felt like liquid fire pulsed through her veins. She tried to scream, but as he had before, Asari had taken her voice. Tears leaked out of the corner of her eyes as every sense and nerve ending in her body raged against the heat the flood of magic caused. She fell on her back and clawed at her chest, the burning inside her lungs suffocating her as it spread. Sarah threw her hands in front of her, clutching at anything that might save her from the agony flowing through her as Asari watched. "Hang in there," he encouraged. "It's almost done." Sarah wanted to believe his words, but as the heat reached her stomach, she knew she couldn't trust them. A wordless scream tried to rip free of her throat as she gasped and curled in on herself, but she still had no voice. Her stomach churned and acid bubbled up the back of her throat, but it felt like only flames would eject from her if she threw up now. She heaved, but got no relief. She slammed her head against the hardwood floors, her instincts urging her to seek the void of unconsciousness any way she could, as voiceless screams continued to escape her. She didn't know how much longer she could bear the pain of sinking into what seemed to be an endless pit of fiery lava. As the heat enveloped her toes, she was sure she was at her end. She trusted the god of the night and had fallen for his ploy. This was the punishment she'd endure for her mother's blasphemy. But then it was gone. Like cool water on molten steel, she felt a relief so deep in her bones she could have screamed in joy. She cracked her eyes open to see she was surrounded by clouds, and Asari was cradling her small body in his hands, the same hands that had carved out every phase of the moon and placed every one of the stars Freya gifted him into the night sky. She looked up into Asari's deep blue gaze and felt as though she were sinking and floating at the same time. "You know the words now?" She nodded and closed her eyes, no longer having the strength to keep them open or respond to him. "You are no longer a daughter of Roth, but a vessel of mine," he whispered as he placed her back in her bed. "Keep your promise to me, Sarah," he warned as he pulled her blanket up around her and his mist faded from the room. "I am not a god who forgives twice."
Thank you. Okay, so you talked about this earlier, saying that your main character, your protagonist, Brandy, is not nice. Mm-hmm. And that's a theme that kind of runs through the book. But mm-hmm. The end of chapter 17, Brandy says, "You know nothing about the goddess. Freya is kind, just, but she was never nice. And neither mm-hmm. am I."
Yes.
Why did you want to center a Black girl, a brown-skinned Black girl, who readily admits and will tell anyone that she's not nice? Was that like you giving permission for other Black girls to be like, you know, you don't have to be nice to be a good person?
Absolutely. Having grown up in predominantly white spaces, there was always this pressure to be nice, to be sweet, to be non-threatening, to not be angry, to not be, you know, loud and opinionated, and to be very, you know, acquiescing to everyone else in the room to make sure that they feel comfortable, even if you aren't. And I felt like so many of the books that I was picking up, there's this push for like Black girl fantasy. And I remember buying all of these books, like, yes, there are Black girls on the cover. There are Black girls on the cover. Finally, this is our time. And I remember getting into it, and there was just this feeling of, okay, yes, it's a Black girl, but she's working so hard to make sure that everybody else in this book is taken care of and is comfortable around her. And I didn't want that. And I was just like, it's okay if other people are uncomfortable around you. It's okay if who you are is bigger than what they feel comfortable being around you. You don't have to shrink yourself to fit into the ideals that someone else has put on you. And I wanted Brandy to embody that. Her personality is big. She knows who she is. She knows that she is loved. She knows that she is powerful. She knows that she can stand behind what she says. And she knows that she can walk on her own 2 feet to do what she wants to do. And she's not worried about making other people comfortable around her. And this idea that as Black women, we do, like, we have to make sure that everyone else is okay, unless we want to be treated as less than, unless we want to be seen as not being worthy of protection. And I wanted to write into this book that no, Brandy's not going to smile at you. She's not going to pretend to be your best friend when she doesn't want to talk to you. And she's still worth being loved. Jack still loves her. She still has friends who are close to her. You know, she's still worthy of being protected. And the idea that the goddess, that she's beautiful and she's the mother of the world, it's just like, but no, she's also the judger of souls. She's also, you know,
judge, like, jury, and executioner.
Exactly. And it's just kind of like, you don't have to be nice. You can be kind to someone. You can share with them and, like, empathize with them, but that doesn't mean you have to be nice to them. Those are two completely different things. And for me, I guess writing that was just permission to myself that I don't have to make other people feel comfortable with this book. I don't have to make people feel comfortable with who I am. I don't have to make people feel comfortable or shrink myself for existing. And I think there's also this aspect of a lot of us pretend to be nice so that we don't create waves and we can not be, have to be confrontational all the time. And I guess I just wanted to give permission, like, it's okay to be confrontational. It's okay to be who you are.
All right. So I want to back up a bit, because for those who have not read the book, you created a whole world. And, like, I don't read a whole lot of fantasy. I think the most recent would probably be, for me, Tomi Adeyemi's series, Children of Blood and Bone, and then the sequel, Children of Vengeance and Virtue, which really enjoyed, still ready on the third installment. But what strikes me is that, you know, you built this entire world, creatures, rules, boundaries, maps. How did you do that? I guess, like, what's the craft behind that? I mean, I know that's something that, like, that's the way your mind works because that's what you enjoy. But, like, for those of us who just, like, write stories about people in on Earth, can you give us the craft behind that?
I would love to say that there's, like, some secret sauce and I got the recipe that I can just, like, give out. But I don't know, for me, it's just like an accumulation of so many things. I've been asked this multiple times and I feel like it's such a cop out, but it's the truth. Like, as far as, like, creating the gods and stuff, a lot of it just came from, like, I took a nap one day and when I woke up, I had a dream about it and I just wrote it down. And that's literally the origin story of the gods. Like, there are definitely things that influenced me, but having spent a lot of time in fantasy and reading books with that type of world building and then being like, oh, what would I do? And how would I do this? And it's literally kind of like, if I was God, what would I create? You know, and that's very, very big and low key. Like, don't ask me how I feel about that, because the whole idea of being God, right?
Oh, no, I'm going to ask because it's one of my questions. So, no. Like, get ready. just get ready. Finish this one and then we'll get there. Okay.
Yeah. But really, it was just that. And I love when fantasy worlds have maps. And I wanted something that was just, I didn't want it to be based on Earth. I didn't want it to be based on America. And because I live in America, I didn't want it to have the social constraints of America. And I wanted to incorporate different ideas that I had run across just in life. Like, okay, what if it wasn't a patriarchy? Because people are like, oh, blame the patriarchy. What if it was a matriarchy? What if women had power? And then, you know, spending a lot of time on the internet, it's just like, okay, but what if love was just love and you could just be with whoever you want to be? And what if monogamy wasn't a thing? Like, you can be monogamous, like Jack and Brandy are monogamous, but there are a lot of people who are polygamous in this book. And it's just like, it is what it is. And it's like, what would it look like if we really had the freedom to just be who we are and love who we love. And then a lot of the lore that came from the world just came from necessity.
So let's get to this religion question. Because like, as I mentioned, I read, you know, Tomi Adeyemi's series, Children of Blood and Bone, which has the Orishas in there. So that's also very much steeped in, you know, African spiritual traditions, African religious traditions. This feels more Afrofuturism to me, but also has that like religious undertone and spiritual undertone with you creating gods and goddesses and realms and all these things and the divine.
I have always been intrigued by the idea of people who have been, I don't want to say indoctrinated, but have grown up with religion, but then they don't depart from it when they're older. They never go through that phase of, I'm going to question this. They never go through the phase of, I don't know if I believe. They never go through that phase of anything. Like they just, they were taught this and they believe it 100%. And they have this unwavering faith. That has always intrigued me because as much as I would like to say that's my story, it's not my story.
So two things, because the Bible says, you know, train up a child in the way that he should go. And when they are old, they will not depart from it.
Yep.
So like, you know, I was a church child. So like that's in me. But when you talk about you don't know how people don't grow up to question or even explore other religious traditions or spiritual traditions or all of that. What has your, I guess, spiritual, religious trajectory been like to allow you to explore that through this matriarchal, polyamorous relationship that you've created in this book?
Ooh, that's a loaded question. Okay, so I am one of those people where it's just like, I grew up going to church, but I did not grow up in the church, if that makes sense. My parents were those kids who were in the church every time the church doors open. And as adults with their own kids, they were like, we're not doing this. No. There's so many layers to this. Because my parents grew up that way with my grandmother and my great grandmother, I saw the level of faith that they had and how they moved in their life and the people that they were. And I was just amazed by it. She's the one who taught me the Lord's Prayer. She's the one who taught me how to pray. She's the one who, you know, taught me the books of the Bible, you know. Then going home, we don't go to church. We don't pray together. That's not a thing that we do in our household. And then as I got older, you know, I began to discover my faith on my own. And it just, and then college and, you know, having this faith and you're surrounded by people who believe different things, it gets tested and it gets, you get asked questions. Why do you believe this? But if you believe this, how can you believe that? And how are you going to move this in this way when it's, you know, you're being contradictory? There are a lot of questions because everyone has questions. And for me, when I was creating We Are the Origin with these gods, I wanted to kind of be able to question that. Also, you know, so many people have questions like, God is a woman? Is God a man? Why do we always assume masculine qualities to him? And then I was like, okay, but what if God's a woman? What if God does not have a gender because we can't conceptualize that? You know, there are so many questions. And I felt like with We Are the Origin, I had the opportunity to sort like kind of explore some of those questions. Like there's this idea that I feel like so many of us have to ask. It's just like, but does God hear me when I pray? Does God know that I exist? And it's just kind of like, those are the two opposite ends. You know, you have New Testament Jesus, which is very, very soft grandpa in the sky. But then you have Old Testament God, who is just like brimstone and fire. Like, yeah. You know,
start over. Go over.
We messed up. Let's try again. Reset. Hard reset.
Rain. Fire.
So I just kind of want to explore all of that and kind of how it affects the people who interact with it. You know, there are so many ways that people go about religion. I just kind of wanted to touch on it. And I'm still figuring out where I stand on things, like in my personal life. Like I absolutely have faith. But I guess I wonder sometimes how big it is.
All right. So then with all that said, what do you want your young Black girl readers to get out of this book that you've created?
I want them to get out of it whatever they need to get out of it. I want them to know that they can be the main character. I want them to know that they can be loved unconditionally by more than one person. I want them to understand that it's okay to have boundaries with people, that they don't have to be best friends with someone just because that person wants to be in their life. I want them to know that they don't have to make other people feel comfortable, that they don't have to be soft in order to be protected. I want them to know that they can go on an adventure. I want them to know that their skin does not define them and what they are capable of and what they can be capable of. I want them to know that they're beautiful, that they are the standard of beauty, and that it is all in how they perceive themselves, and that they can walk with confidence, and that they can do whatever they want to do. You know, like, I hope they get whatever it is that they pick up this book looking to find.
Hmm. And so, just so that we have it on record, when is book two coming out?
I am aiming for August 29th, 2023. That is the tentative release date as of right now, if nothing changes.
All right. So I want to switch to the speed round in the game before I let you go for the afternoon.
Okay.
What is your favorite book?
I don't have favorite books. I have obsessions. And my current obsession right now is Rust in the Root by Justina Ireland.
Who is your favorite author?
Elle Penelope. I love her so much. Like, her stories are incredible. Her world building is like a masterclass every time I pick it up. And I've read pretty much every single one of her books, and I listen to her podcast, and I'm subscribed to her newsletter, and I'm going to read her next book.
What's your favorite TV show?
I don't really watch TV. I watch more anime, but as far as TV, I would probably have to say Bones.
What do you think is the best book to movie adaptation?
I would probably have to say Bridge to Terabithia.
All right. If We Are the Origin got the movie treatment, who would play which character? Specifically, I want to know who would play Rose, because I'm thinking Winston Duke.
Yes. Glad we're on the same page, because I was literally going to say that.
Okay, yes. Great. So I'm like, Rose is fine and tall and wide and joyous. And I'm like, whoo, that's yes. Winston. But who would play some of your main characters?
Honestly, if I could get Kiki Palmer to play Brandy, that would make my whole life, because I love her so much. I would also really love if, like, I don't know, like, who would be Freya, like the perfect version of Freya. But part of me kind of wants, like, Brandy the actress. I think she would make an amazing Freya. As far as Jack, like, I would love if Michael B. Jordan could play him, but I think he's, like, old, might be too old.
Okay. If you had a superpower, what would you want it to be and why?
If I had a superpower, I would just want the ability to, like, replicate myself temporarily so that I could get more done. Just be like, okay, person one, we're going to write the book. Person two, you're going to edit the podcast and do the marketing. Let's go.
Name three things on your bucket list.
Honestly, if I'm rethinking it, like, in this moment, I would actually say the top three things would be to travel, to get an anime adaptation of my book, like Avatar The Last Airbender type treatment. And I would want to be able to, like, be financially stable enough to allow my children to pick their own path in life.
So then, with that said, if money were no object, where would you go? What would you do? And where would you live?
I would go everywhere. I would start with Canada, though, because I've always wanted to go to Canada since I saw Degrassi as a kid. I was like, I want to go to Canada. I want to see the set. That's where I want to go. So that's where I want to go. What I want to do, I want to write. I want to write in pretty places and just, like, be like, oh, I woke up with this beautiful ocean sunrise, and I'm going to be out here click-clacking on my keyboard with my coffee and my tea. And then I'm just, like, going to, like, be famous and just, like, travel and be a bird in the wind. where would I live? I think I would stay where I'm at. I really like being in the Charlotte area. I like being in the woods where no one bothers us, but I like being able to go into town if we want to have people interactions. That's pretty cool.
Okay. And then our game is called Rewriting the Classics. So Name one book you wish you would have written.
I would probably say The Uglies Den by Scott Westerfeld. I love the book, but I would also like add Black people into it.
Name a book where you want to change the ending, and how would you do it?
There's a book called For All Time by Shanna Miles. The book is great. The ending, me and her had to have some words about that ending. I would change it because I would change it so that the resolution wasn't necessarily the two main characters taking time away from each other. It would be more so making that leap of faith towards each other instead of away.
All right. And finally, name a book that you think is overrated and why.
I don't want to say the book that I want to say because I feel like people are going to hate me. So
that's the whole point of the question.
I know. a book that's overrated. Okay, you know, I'm going to take a leap of faith. I'm going to say Legend Born by Tracy Dion. And I'm going to caveat this by saying, I think the book is extremely well written. I think it's a good book, even. However, I do think it's overhyped sometimes because I think it came out at that right time where people were wanting Black girl fantasy. And I think it filled a void that people were hoping to fill. But I think it's a little overhyped. I think it's good, but I don't think it's the standard to compare every fantasy book to.
All right. Final question for the podcast. When you are dead and gone and among the ancestors, what would you like someone to write about you and the legacy of words and work that you left behind?
I would hope they say that she wrote books for Black girls, and I hope that someone will one day say that I helped to create a space in Black fantasy where Black girls are allowed to exist and be who they are unapologetically.
Thank you, Chelsea.
Thank you.
Big thank you to C.M. Lockhart for being here today on Black and Published. Make sure you check out her debut Afrofuturism fantasy novel, We Are the Origin. It's out now, everywhere books are sold. And if you're not following C.M., check her out on the socials. She's at C. Lockhart Write on Twitter and Instagram. Again, that's C. Lockhart Write. That's our show for the week. If you'd like this episode and want more Black and Published, head to our Instagram page. It's at Black and Published, and that's BLK and Published. There, I've posted a bonus clip from my interview with CM about the masterclasses she took to help her hone her craft and skill at writing. Make sure you check it out and let me know what you think in the comments. I'll holla at y'all next week when our guest will be Mantis, author of the poetry collection, The Root Work Stretched.
Something that was really funny is that a couple months ago, I had gotten like a rejection, like almost like it was so funny to get a rejection from one of the places that I submitted the manuscript to.
And the book is already in the world.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
It just like felt like one of those like little taps from the universe, like, hey, remember this?
That's next week on Black and Published. I'll talk to you then. Peace.